Stream is live. We are live. Okay. Let's go, Brent. Don't even worry about it. I am super jacked, super excited, Brent, about this topic. Like, I think this is fascinating. One. Yeah, we were talking about this the other day, and we're like, who should be on the cover of EA next year? Like, NCAA football, if you're a 40-year-old man. Yeah, if you're a 40-year-old man and you remember how great it was and you picked it back up, it did not disappoint. Like, still absolute greatness. Love kicking the crap out of my son. Still using the old tricks of being able to press DB, slide my line. He's like, how do you slant your line? I'm like, yeah, it's still in there. Like, it's amazing. Like, so much fun. But
I shouldn't tell the story of me playing mine, Cameron.
I bet Cameron beat the crap out of you.
It did not end well for me. No, it did not.
I bet Cameron smashed you. Yes. You're a little out of that range, Brent. You're not in that. You're an actual adult. I am not. Like, so it works out well. True. But so I think it's cool. And then this year, we can argue whether they hit the right ones with 2025. You got Quinn Ewers, you got Donovan Edwards, and you got Travis Hunter, the Heisman Trophy winner. So I guess at least one out of three, maybe two out of three. But you got the most important one. I came across some trivia questions because I had to study for this, Brent. I'm not going to lie. What was the first video game called?
Like video game, any video game?
The first.
Or the college football
video game that EA Sports put out. I'll give you a little context. It was in 1994.
I mean, sadly, I probably had this game, but I don't remember.
I'm pretty excited about this trivia, by the way. I read today on this stuff, which is, I'm such a loser, but Bill Walsh College Football.
Yeah, that I didn't have that
call back in 94, because they didn't have the rights to college yet. So it was literally Bill Walsh College Football in 94 and then 95. And then in 96, it got a new name. I'm going to assume if you didn't know that last one, you probably didn't know the new name either.
No.
College Football USA. Wow. That's what it was called. Yeah. See, hey, when you do research,
where was I? Amazing. I mean, I know I had Tecmo Bowl and, you know, Tecmo Super Bowl and all those games in that time frame. Madden was
slant
out.
But, and Tecmo Bowl. Just keep going. Just keep running the circles.
But no, Jackson. I didn't remember having that one.
Okay. So we got College Football USA. And it was College Football USA 1997. But that's the first year that someone graced the cover of a college football or EA Sports college football game. Any guess to who that was? 97.
So probably not Peyton, maybe Peyton Manning?
Nope. It was Tommy Frazier.
Oh, okay. That's a good choice. He just won.
It was the first one.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we got to 1998 and we see NCAA football. And that was I'll give you one quick guess who graced the first ever cover of NCAA football.
Danny Werfel?
Danny Werfel. Bam.
Look at
that. Attaboy. You got one at least.
Yes.
So
didn't Florida win it all in Florida won it all in 96, right?
Yes. That was There you go. Look at that. Nice, yeah. And then Jesse Palmer got recruited to Florida and things just went downhill south.
He wore that number too, didn't he?
Yes, it got awful. Horrible decision by Florida to bring in some Canadian humpy. We should get Jesse on the show. He is one of the best dudes I know. He studies the game like nobody's business. He's got all kinds of interest now too. But a few other fun facts before we get into our exercise. 1999 was the first non-quarterback on the cover.
And Charles Woodson,
the first defensive player. And then we went through a litany of people. And then in 2014, it was Denard Robinson, and then it went away. And then now we're back. So I don't know how you started your exercise of your guys, Brent, but go ahead. Do you have something?
I was just saying, before we get into this exercise, I think it's good for the audience to hear about your life and your involvement with what they know is the current game, because I know a little bit. I've seen the room and I've seen the get up. So describe it and what you had to do.
Well, so today we had a session. We had a live session where we literally You know, you basically go line by line in the game. And, you know, like we were with me and Jesse did, you know, lines. And so we'll go through the different modes of the game and the different scores, the different rivalries, and we'll literally put in like lines, and then the game can like artificially, you know, tell the situations, and then they plug it in. So like third and one from the 50-yard line, they ran it, they got it, go. Like there's nothing to look at, there's nothing to see, but you kind of got a picture of what it is from them telling you. Shout out to Torsten, who always, you know, reads it, does a great job. He plays Reese Davis, very unsuccessfully a lot of the times, but yeah, like so we just literally
up in your room, and like you can't, it's not like you're playing the game, it's you're just reading stuff, right?
Yeah, you're just reading it, and it makes you realize it's kind of tough. I mean, it really last year I thought, because we've been doing this for a couple years now, building up to the game last year, but like it's definitely gotten easier and better to do, but it's more difficult exercise than you think it was. But to say that, here's my disclaimer. I have no inside information. Yeah. I am on the game. I'm going to be on the game next year, and you'll hear my voice, you know, doing the play-by-play. I don't know who's going to be on the cover. So this exercise is outside of the confines of EA Sports. It has nothing to do. I'm not liable, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So, but how did you, how did you start the process of who you were going to put on the cover?
Okay. So I went QB. You're such
a nerd. So I can't wait to see this.
I went QB, non-QB offense, and then defense.
Okay, start there then. Start there. Defense. Year. How many players did you have on defense?
5.
Really? Okay. Who were the five players you considered?
It was a stretch. It was somewhat stretching.
I put one defensive player on my list, and we'll talk about why later that he doesn't fit the criteria, but there was only one guy I could think about. So who were your five defensive guys?
So Leonard Moore from Notre Dame. Wow. KJ Bolden from Georgia, Colin Simmons from Texas, Dylan Stewart from South Carolina, and then Caleb Downs.
Okay. So I did honorable mention first. So my first team is like honorable mention, and I had Caleb Downs. I thought he should be one of the defensive guys because I think he is one of the most unique. He returns punts, which I think is a big feather in his cap. Returned one against Indiana for a touchdown. So I thought like that's part of it. Cause listen, defensive players, I'm a defensive guy. The chances of getting one in there is slim to none, and Slim just left the building. So I think you got to play offense at least two. And so the special teams component gave him a chance, but I'm comfortable. And I want to know if we can move on to the next phase. I'm comfortable saying that there's a 0% chance that there's a defensive guy on it. Are you?
No, I'm not.
So you think there is a chance?
I think that chance is
okay.
Very
all right,
strong.
All right, stop. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, all right. all right, so who other honorable mentions did you have on your list before we start to shrink this thing down? Because here's the thing that I think everybody's got to realize. Like, I don't think you can put multiple guys from a team on there. You know, correct. Can you put guys from a team from the past year, I think is an interesting debate. Quinn Ewers being a Texas quarterback, will you do that again? Considered that. What other factors? Like just, you know, the years past, obviously it's been very QB-centric, very running back-centric. So defenses are kind of out. So I started to kind of go through – that's how I started to go through my honorable mention.
Other things too is obviously with this first sort of new addition, they had 3 guys.
Yeah.
They could just do 1. They could do 2. Like three is not, it's not like 3 is a mandatory. I will say I picked 3. But in terms of how they do that, like you showed Danny Werfel on one of them and Woodson, like Denard Robinson on one. Like, so it can be just a singular player.
First time they did multiple players was 2009, because the year before was Jared Zabransky in 2008. I got the whole list, by the way. And they only did that for like 2009, 2010. Another one to throw in there. 11 was Tebow. 12 was Mark Ingram. 2013, we had RG3 and Barry Sanders. And then 14, Denard Robinson. Okay, so I went by conference, Brent, because that's okay. Another thing that I thought, like, I think you want to represent multiple spots of the country. I don't think you want to represent just one. And I think that's a big deal. I think I just, that's the way I look at it in my head, because I'm marketing to multiple demographics and So here's my list that I wrote down. And again, some of these are honorable mention that I'll get to, but here's the people I wrote down. So for the SEC, Arch Manning, you agree?
Yep. I have him on the list, on my list of possibles. Okay. Yes. It's hard to not. The brand is
Arch Manning. The Texas brand is huge. The name is huge. Yep. A little insight, by the way, when they filmed a commercial for the NCAA video game last year, it was Eli, his uncle, and him in the commercial. So
right.
There's a previous relationship. Yep. Again, I don't know anything. I'm just telling you it was a commercial that they did last year.
Wasn't that him saying, hey, I'm in the game kind of thing? Like he was, because there was some debate and he's like, I'm in the game or something like that. Yeah.
Well, and they've got to come. I think they have to come to agreements with everybody to pay them to put them in the game now because of name, image, and likeness. Yeah. So Arch Manning, you agree? Right. Okay.
Yep.
So I have him high on the list in the SEC. Another guy I have high on the list in the SEC is Ryan Williams.
He was one of my three in the non-QB offense category.
Okay. Ryan Williams in there. Another guy from the SEC I had is Nico. I think the hype was so big for him a year ago. Obviously, he was a freshman. He took his lumps. He did not perform to the standard in which, like, we kind of had expectations for him. But you can the talent is oozing. It's dripping. Like, you saw him in the Ohio State game in the playoffs too. Like, run the football as much as he needed to and did what he needed to. You want to start adding to this? I got more too. If you want to throw some on there too, though.
So I've got those two. I think you, in terms of SEC, I had 1, 2, 3, 4 other names from the SEC, and they're all quarterbacks. So
I bet I have them too.
Garrett Nussmeier, LSU.
Yep. I think that's a good one. I think Nussmeier had flashes last year. And I'm just telling you, if I'm an LSU fan, I don't know that there's many people I'd take over him coming back. Like that's as heavy praise as it gets. Now he got loose with the ball. The protection wasn't as good. The running game frustrated the piss out of everybody that watched it and probably everybody in Death Valley. But I think like you saw some things that you go, okay, that's a dude. Like he can get my franchise where I need to go. So I completely agree with that one.
By the way, you know how I also kind of cheated on this a little bit?
What?
I looked at the Heisman odds.
Oh, did you really?
Yes.
See, I didn't look at any of those. I did not look at a single one of those.
All right. DJ Lagway. I had him as a possibility.
I got him as honorable mention, but we saw some dynamic stuff from DJ Lagway. And I saw some toughness from Lagway to think like that dude, he could have some special in there, no doubt. So I put him on the honorable mention.
Lenore Sellers.
This is my sleeper. Like just, and I say that the way he finished, like the way he finished the season, the way South Carolina finished and the style of play. Like
I say, think about strong, the game. You want the running quarterback.
You want a big, strong dude. And guess what? A guy with goggles. Like, how is that not fantastic? Like Chris Sabo looking mug. And listen, I know he fixed his eyes, you know, middle of the season, end of the season. I was very disappointed because I really liked the goggles, but I love that you put him on there. I had him on there too. And I think Lenore Sellers is, I think he's got a chance to take next steps. And if he can grow as a passer, he could be scary to defend just because he big, strong. I mean, that dude, like he puts people on his hood when he runs and I am here for it. I love it. I think he's the heartbeat of South Carolina's team. So I absolutely love that you put him on your list. I didn't know if you would or not, but I guess you were looking at Heisman odds. So.
Just in general, looking at who I thought it could be, it's a combo of both. Because my wild card, you said your sleeper was him. My wild card, my sleeper, is who Ben put in the comment section. That would be Diego Pavia.
Pavia! I never, Brent, considered him. But I love it. I didn't consider putting him on the list.
I put him on my list and he's not on your list. Let's go.
Correct. So I think I owe Ben, Brent, and Pavia an apology because that dude was magic. Like you talk about like playmaking and fun and big wins. And now listen, the record was the record. in the end.
But he got some national spotlight and, you know,
and deserved it. And he had some crunkness on the field after the game. Like the celebration with his crew was fantastic. I think that's a miss. I think that's a miss by me. At least not having him on the honorable mention. I like that.
He's my wild card. He's not my selection for the three, but he's my wild card.
Okay, so is that all your SEC guys? Because that's the way I did it. I'm going to go to the next. Okay. Yep. Big 12.
I've got one.
I bet it's the same as mine. Who you have?
Sam Levitt.
I mean, the brass balls before the game against Texas to talk about, like, Quinn Ewers who. Like, I ain't worried about that, dude. Love that. That got attention. The way he played in that game, the scrambling ability, the dual threat, that system, more players around him. Listen, Scataboo is a huge loss. Like, that's a big deal. But Levitt was one of my three honorable mention guys that are in the Big 12. So I had two others.
I will say, by the way, because I looked at the Heisman odds, he was 33-1 to win the Heisman. That is a – if I'm – that kind of person, I like that as a possibility because of their schedule and the number he's – and if he stays healthy, the numbers he's going to put up.
They're going to be stupid.
I like that one. I like that one.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Okay.
All right, so you had two others.
These are reaches. These are not like by any stretch. They're not in the mix. They're long shots. Avery Johnson from Kansas State because of style play. Like really fun – fast quarterback. I like to play with fast quarterback. If you're not a mobile quarterback, by the way, I don't play with you. Love you, but don't play with you. So Avery Johnson was on there and listen, he didn't have a great sophomore year, but I still think the talent's high and I still think he can take next steps and he's really exciting. And then Retzlaff from BYU. Like he had a great year, had some playmaking. Again, put him on the list, not considering them for the real deal, but I do think they deserve recognition to be on the list. I went ACC next.
Okay.
Who you got?
Depends on how we're counting one team, but if counting that one team as an independent, I only got one ACC person.
Okay. I know. I already know exactly what you mean. You mean Notre Dame.
Yes.
So I like that, but I'm just counting ACC. Who do you got just in the ACC?
I'm just going Cade Klubnik.
Okay, all right. Klubnik finished in the top 10 this year. Klubnik returns all of his weapons. Shout out to Klubnik, by the way. Antonio Williams, they're coming to our golf tournament on 5/5 to support the Pollock Family Foundation. Thank you, dude.
Nice,
appreciate that. I'm with Cade Klubnik. I think Cade Klubnik showed a lot of promise, and I think we bragged about him enough on this pod. Like he took steps to get better and to really grow, and I trust he'll continue to do the same. And I think they can only get better on the offensive line. I think they can only get better at running back because they really, really struggle to do those things. And so I think they'll improve. I have one other guy. Who do you think it might be? QB.
I mean, I'm really. First thought was like
playing the championship game versus Clemson.
Oh, Kevin Jennings.
Kevin Jennings.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Style of play that definitely fits.
Style of play, that dude played great. And listen, the way he finished probably left a bad taste in everybody's mouth because it was bad. He scored more points for Penn State than he did for his team that day, but it was cold and it was a bad moment, but he had a good year. And remember, took over. You know, three games in as the starter, dynamic, electric, had some great moments. So I'm
mad at myself for not including him.
You should have. I agree. So that's your Pavia miss. That's your Pavia miss for me. Your independent / ACC is going to be exact same as mine. Who'd you have?
Jeremiah Love.
Got to be Jeremiah Love. Like, I love me some Jeremiah Love. Like, that dude – Hurdling moments are huge. 98-yard runs in playoff games are huge. He wasn't healthy when it mattered, but like splash plays are a big part of the Heisman Trophy, especially if you're a running back. Like you think about Reggie Bush, Fresno State, right? Like running down the sidelines, making plays. Like I think it's a big part of it. I think Jeremiah Love's special. I think he'll have some moments. So I completely agreed with that one. Big 10.
I only have, well, if you include Caleb Downs' defense, I had three, but I had two.
Okay.
Drew Aller and Jeremiah Smith.
Okay. Did you have any consideration for like Singleton or Allen? Did you think about that, like with Penn State?
No, because
you can only pick one.
Right, it's a cancel each other out. If you're going, I'm only going to pick one. I'm not going to go with two of those guys. Those two guys, and go to four. You know, on the cover. Maybe they do that, but I just also think that there's a clear. The three, to me, non-QB offensive guys, and we've mentioned some, I just think they're better than those two guys. So.
I left one guy off my ACC lift, by the way. I had another ACC guy.
Okay, who's that? Well, if are you going to say Carson Beck?
Absolutely. That is tasty and fantastic. Like, Carson Beck, very
salty. Healthy, be very salty.
Salty. Carson Beck. First of all, the Georgia fans, if you're going to throw hate at that dude sat on the bench for 2 years while you won national championships, was a great teammate, waited his turn and gave you two good years. And his offensive line this year was a struggle. His receivers were a struggle. So, like, let's back off, like, hating the kid. I mean, he's a good football player. He's a really good football player. And yeah. When he goes to Miami in that league, in that system with the offensive line, with the weapons, I'm just telling you, the numbers are going to be video game-like. It's going to be insane.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
I'm a little hesitant there, actually.
Okay.
Because I'm seeing again. All these weapons that are killing it at the Senior Bowl and linemen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That aren't on their team anymore.
Yes. No, I get it. So Drew Aller, Caleb Downs, Jeremiah Smith, those were your three?
Those were my three Big Ten guys.
Okay. All right. So we had a lot of agreement on that. Later on, we're going to catch up with Field Yates, by the way, at the Senior Bowl. We caught up with him this morning, just talking all things practices that's been going down there and all your favorite teams for college football and your guys and how they're doing and kind of where they'll be drafted. I think is really cool. I think you'll like that. All right. How do we start narrowing this list down now to guys that we start taking?
Who's your
off
three?
Because
just who's your three? Because I got my three. I texted you this. I feel very confident in my three. I would borderline put a wager on my three. If it's three, by the way, if it's three, because that's, I think that's still a TBD.
Will you name the, what you would you like to wager? Because I am all in for this. Like, what is the, what are you willing to put on this that we could make you suffer and do? Cause I think this would be absolutely fantastic.
I mean, I thought you said suffer there. I thought you were going to put some sort of physical challenge on this.
Yes, absolutely. Love to make you do death by sled in the gym.
Yes, there we go. I can do that. I can do all right, that. If
death
I lose.
By sled. Okay. I say that because I don't have three. So I don't think it's going to be three. I think it's going to be two. And I have my two.
Okay. Ooh, that I will say that changes. I feel good. I still feel good about two. Yes, but it does. But I still feel good about two.
Okay. Shoot fire. Go ahead, bro.
All right. So if it was three and we keep the three, my three was Cade Klubnik, Jeremiah Love, ooh, and Caleb Downs. Those are my
wow
three. You get the defending champ Downs in there. You get Love from in the championship game, and you get the Notre Dame brand, and you get somebody in the South. And then also there's, just I'm sure somebody EA just having fun and saying, hey, there's not gonna be somebody from the SEC. Those would be my three.
That is incredible. Like, if you ask me to pick three, Brent, I would have none of yours on there.
Well, so,
none.
All right, so let me defend the Downs part. Is you've got one more year to put Jeremiah Smith on it. He'll be on it next year. I mean,
don't care. And let me rebuff that. I don't give a rat's ass. Like,
true.
Okay. That. Wow. Okay. I thought. Okay. I mean, if you made me do three, the only reason I say it's two because the Texas quarterback. If you made me do three, I'd go Arch Williams, or Arch Manning. Excuse me. I'd go Ryan Williams, and I'd go Jeremiah Smith. But here's what makes a lot of sense to me, Brent. the most dynamic player in college football last year for most of the season was Ryan Williams. Like, splash plays, palooza, yeah. Big plays, excitement. To me, it makes a lot of sense. Okay, who else down the stretch was the by far the most exciting player putting up huge numbers in the playoffs? Alabama, Ohio State, receiver. I had a Texas quarterback last year. I just feel like that might take that out. Give me Ryan Williams and give me Jeremiah Smith for the cover.
Okay. That's, by the way, that's amazing that I felt very confident in my three, and it's none of the ones that you had.
How confident do you feel now?
If it were two,
I'm not a part of the selection process.
Yes. Just disclaimer, right? Got to put that disclaimer. Yeah. Put it in the notes for the YouTube thing. I think it's Downs. I think he's that good of a player and people know him. And I think it's Jeremiah Love if you put two in there because of, you know, now you've got the two teams that were in the national championship the previous year. Usually they have somebody that was the national champ the previous year or just as if, I mean, which some not, but for the most part it was. So yeah, that was my reasoning.
Interesting. I got one Big Ten guy, one SEC guy. I feel like those two conferences rule the sport. Yeah. The two most exciting guys that play the game like a video game. I mean, Ryan Williams is a video game.
Especially like Ryan, yeah. Silly, I do like my wild card, though. I do like my Pavia wild card.
Pavia. I like Pavia, too. I think that's a good one to put on the honorable mention list. It's not a good one to put on the list like you actually think it's going to happen. But that was really fun. Like that was thoroughly enjoyable. I loved learning the history of EA because I didn't know it. And then I love even more that you picked three guys. I picked two and you had none of them. Like Sean, I literally said that in my head when I wrote Ryan Williams. I'm like, you know, the only thing that stinks is these stupid commentators in the game, pointing at me, by the way, are going to be like, Ryan Williams, 18 years old. Because we heard 17-year-old Ryan Williams who graduated early. Like, oh, my gosh, you knew that was going to happen. Yeah, y'all put that in the chat, man.
Ben's got two of my three. I don't think it's going to be Arch just because he hasn't, as much as the brand and people know who he is, he hasn't played. And
yeah,
the guys last year, like you think about last year, Hunter had already shown that. Quinn was the playoff QB. Edwards was the returning offensive guy for the most part from a national championship team. Like I got that. So if it had to be one, I actually think it's Caleb Downs.
Yeah. If you gave me, I just can't do without.
Or Jeremiah Smith. It's got to be one of those two. I think if it's
both
one.
Both of mine. Like you just, I don't even. I can't even debate the other one. I can't even put yours in the conversation with the other ones for me. It just doesn't even. It's not making sense in my brain. But I love Joe Long, Bill Belichick. That would be phenomenal with the hoodie.
Actually,
just
be fun.
Hey, maybe rings up. You know, on his hands, just coming back to it.
That would be good. That would be funny.
This was a fun exercise. I think next week we're gonna cover a little Tennessee too and talk about them. And
yeah, so I think that's what we're gonna do going forward is try to be here Tuesday, Thursday as best we can, and one day hit a team and really look and dive into that singular team. And Tuesday we're gonna look at Tennessee,
state of the program, Tennessee. But next we'll get to our boy Field Yates. He had a lot of coffee this morning, like always, caffeinated Field Yates. So here's Benjamin Button. This next guest, I met him like 20 years ago, and the weird thing is you still look the same, bro. You looked 12 20 years ago, and now you look 13. So what are we doing? Like,
so those people that have leap year birthdays who age 1 year every 4 years, I'm on like the supersized leap year. Like every 20 years, I age 1 year. I'm okay with that, man. Listen, if I die, you know, 70 years from now, and I'm only 15 and a half years old in your eyes, I'll be good with that.
Yeah, and Field Yates, y'all have seen him for years, and Field's done a great job with fantasy football, but the last couple of years starting to do the draft, and I know he loves it, like absolutely loves it, and you love it so much you're at the Senior Bowl. So, like at the Senior Bowl where a bunch of guys that we're going to hear very early in the draft are working and preparing, so the first couple of days of practice and talking to scouts and all the guys there, what have we seen or learned so far?
Yeah, probably one of the coolest part of the Senior Bowl is that I would say, I mean, I've seen every jersey, every logo here from the NFL, and it's and why the scouts are terrific at what they do. And I think they're often the most underappreciated parts of the football operation. These guys who spend their fall driving or through from campus to campus to campus. And sometimes it's, you know, going to Georgia and going to, you know, whatever, Alabama, Ohio State, like, you know, that's like an NFL combine each day you show up. But I'm talking to guys that are driving to small schools, right, that have gone and seen kids at the University of South Alabama or seen kids at Utah State, gotten to lay the land on what these kids might become. But you've also got all the heavy hitters. Like, you look around practice on the field, and it's John Lynch talking to Mike Tomlin, right, or Mike Vrabel and D'Amico Ryans up in the stands. You are seeing head coaches and GMs that are getting up close and personal exposure to these kids, many of which will be, you know, I think there's definitely first rounders on the field, you know, throughout this week here. But Jim Nagy, who you know well, was on the show recently, I know, and has done an incredible job as the executive director of the Senior Bowl, basically compiling about 110 of like the 150 or so best players in the entire draft process year in and year out. So I love being up close and personal and seeing these kids, you know, on the hoof, so to speak. And, you know, you read the roster, you see them on TV or on tape, and you know they're big. But, man, there's a different level of appreciation when you go see a guy who, like Emory Jones from LSU, their right tackle, who's got nearly 11-inch hands. And I think they might have missed him on the height weight measurement because they got him at like 6'6". This guy looks like an NBA power forward. So you just got impressive guys walking around the field that it's really cool to see them up close and personal. For me, at least, it's really the only exposure to get that during the year.
So how much do you see that, you know, the players, excuse me, their measurements at the school versus what you see in person? A little off.
Yeah, every wide receiver who's listed at 210 is actually 192 pounds as of this week. That's what I've learned, right? And every offensive lineman that's listed as 310 pounds on the roster is actually 335 pounds as of this week. But, you know, it is a big part of it. So I kind of go back and forth, and I talk about this with scouts all the time, and coaches, GMs, you name it, is that, you know, there are certainly – I understand why you got to have thresholds, right? You have to have thresholds because there are – you know, there's historical data and evidence that shows that, like, it's really hard to be, you know, an offensive tackle in the NFL if you weigh 305 pounds. Like, there's just not enough mass on your body to hold up when you've got these big, powerful defensive ends like TJ Watt or Myles Garrett just putting their hands in your chest plate and driving you back off the ball. But there are also exceptions, right? We see guys every single year where they overthink it a little bit. You know, I'm talking about more of the extreme examples like Puka Nacua, right? Too slow coming out of BYU, a little bit older. And it's like, well, the speed hasn't slowed him down at all, right? The guy has become one of the best wide receivers within the first 2 years of his NFL career. So I do find the height weight stuff is incredibly valuable, but I think this week allows me to also see what it means within context, if that makes sense. Like, all right, so you're telling me this guy, you know, a little short here, you know, shorter arms for a wide receiver. How does it match up with what you see on the field? Like, is there a contested catch situation where he's trying to make a play, you know, while being blanketed by a defensive back? And if he had a bit more reach, it's a catch. But because he's got the T-Rex arms, it's actually a consistent drop. So trying to actually apply where the measurements matter on the practice field this week is also an important part of the puzzle here.
Yeah, and one guy that I think sticks out, and listen, I'm in this fraternity field, so it really – it kind of pisses me off, I'm not going to lie, yeah, is Mike Green from Marshall. Like, led the nation, yeah, in sacks. Oh, he's got short arms. Well, if you got, yeah, short arms, for God's sakes, you can't be a great pass rusher. And I get it. There's advantages. But, you know, I always appreciated being a little bit undersized because I could get underneath people. Like, I never looked at that as something that was a negative. But his rep versus Connerly yesterday, Oregon's offensive tackle, the best way, if you did not see it, I can describe it, is bug meat windshield at 55 miles an hour. Like, literally coming off the edge, he's a speed guy. He's a speed guy. He doesn't do much of the other stuff, and he comes off and shows a little bit of power. So how nice is it seeing a guy that maybe played at Marshall, still led the nation in sacks, but now he gets to go against the best of the best with the quote-unquote all the measurables that you need?
Yeah, so Mike is an interesting player because, you know, I've sort of been on the more optimistic side for Mike throughout the process, but you're right. I mean, the big question, you know, during this process has been, well, you know, how long are the arms? And I think to myself, you know, I don't care who you're playing against. To stumble into 17 sacks, like, That's something, right? I don't care who you're playing. Again, I don't care if you're playing D3 football. 17 sacks, like, here's how it goes. When you're playing Marshall and he wears number 15, the game plan every week was, if we slow that guy down, we've got a chance. And no one could do it. By the way, that includes Ohio State, the national champions,
yep,
who didn't have a plan for him that worked, at least, when they played all the way back in September. And as you guys know, that Ohio State offensive line, that's a darn good offensive line. Now, most of the production came against the right side of the offensive line as opposed to the left side, where you had both Josh Simmons and Donovan Jackson at that time of the year. But at some point, I'm thinking to myself, guys, at some point, we got to, you know, the job for pass rushers is to get home. And he consistently gets home. He's 251 pounds. The dude is rocked up. I was talking to Quint Kestnick, who does, you know, sidelines in the fall for football at ESPN and then does lacrosse. He's like the face of lacrosse coverage at ESPN. And, you know, he hadn't seen Mike Green prior to this week. And he was doing sort of a lap on the first day of practices. And he came over and he goes, who's this 15 from Marshall? He's like, you see that dude yet? He's rocked. And, you know, there are some pass rushers where, you know, the length has caught up to them a little bit. But also, to your point, is that some of these guys have thrived because it's allowed them to almost become like forklift guys, you know, get underneath these offensive tackles. You know, we talk about low man wins, and we're usually talking about like somebody blocking somebody else, right? Well, it can apply to pass rushing as well. So I continue to think that Mike is a first round lock. He actually decided last night on after Wednesday's practice, he decided to go back home and continue his preparation for the draft away from the Senior Bowl because he's probably sure enough, right? Like, the goal
had a couple good
like
days
coming down here.
I'm out.
Yeah, a couple good days. Yeah, and listen, the risk versus reward is a calculation these kids owe to themselves, right? So, you know, I think he's probably solidified where he stands within the league, and I hope he continues to get more traction during the pre-draft process for people that aren't necessarily hardcore college football fans, because by all accounts, you know, I mean, a guy that physical, that strong, as we saw, and that athletic, like, those are the kind of players you're looking for to rush the passer in the NFL.
And those guys go in the first round. So who are some other guys?
Usually,
That maybe have you thought they were first rounders, tape based, and now they come and they compete. And I think there's probably a couple others who have maybe said, all right, I'm good. I'm out. Who are those guys that have put the stamp on the first round grade kind of deal?
Yeah, I mean, I can actually kind of look at the guys who departed last night, which is unfortunate, obviously, for the game itself. You know, we'd love to see these guys on the practice field today and then on the game field on Saturday, selfishly, right? But we also have a brain about ourselves, and we know why they're doing what they're doing. I don't begrudge them. I'd probably do the same thing if I were in their shoes. But after Wednesday's practice, Shamar Stewart, Texas A&M defensive lineman, edge, pass rusher, whatever you want to call him, he also decided he's not going to practice today and play the game on Saturday. And Shamar's kind of anti-Mike Green in this regard. In three seasons, he had 4.5 sacks total, 1.5 as a true freshman, 1.5 as a sophomore, and 1.5 this past year. So no one's going to sit here and say, hey, just go to the YouTube highlights and check out all the sacks, and you know everything you need to know. So, of course, that raises your eyebrows a little bit, 4.5 sacks. But there are examples of players that have had, you know, modest college production and gone on to become great players. This is like the absolute upper extremity threshold. But another dog, Richard Seymour, famously had 1.5 sacks his final season at Georgia. And then, you know, for my money, you know, he's one of the best players I've ever seen up close and personal. He's a Hall of Fame player. I mean, he Super Bowl champion. You know, Belichick, that was Belichick's first round pick with the Patriots. And people were ripping him apart and say, how the hell could you take a guy with 1.5 sacks in his final season over there were a couple wide receivers that they wanted them to take at the time because the Patriots are short on wide receivers, David Terrell and Corin Robinson. I think Seymour outplayed those guys in terms of number of games by like 100 by himself and went on to become a focal point of a team that won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. So to get this back to Shamar Stewart, you got to look at the traits, not just the stats here. He's 6'6", 281 pounds, and like – I know that the combine has a little bit of, you know, there's some fool's gold, right? But there are also are examples of guys who go to the combine and you go, all right, that guy's just not going to fall too low. And Shamar Stewart might be that guy this year. Like, if you tell me we get there and whatever night the defensive linemen run, he goes 4.55 in the 40 at 281 pounds, like, that sounds about right to me. It's got really good power and length. The big thing with Shamar, and I'd love to see him work with, like, I love, like, DP, you ever got your hands on this guy, and actually, like, Here's how I describe him. It's almost like he's a 50% of the play player. It's not an effort thing. It's like he'll get off the ball with his nasty power and then can't quite finish. Like the part where he has the chance to make the play on the quarterback, it doesn't quite connect. Or, you know, he might not necessarily get there off the ball initially, but all of a sudden you see him realize the ball carrier is on the opposite end of the field. And then you see this 281 pounder, like sprint sideline to sideline. And you're like, if you could just connect those two things, you'd have a really, really, I think, special player. But we know in the NFL, teams are going to take swings on a guy like that. So he'd be a good example. I know I got long there, but one more name that I'll give you of a guy who actually is sticking around is Josh Connerly from Oregon, who, you know, was on the unfortunate end of that Mike Green bull rush. That being said, with Connerly,
he was the bug
in this case. That's right. Tell you what, man, this guy though, like, he's steady, man. It's just reliable. He's a left tackle in college. I was a right tackle on that rep. So I think he, you know, as you guys know, that left tackle versus right tackle transition can sometimes be, in the beginning, it's a little bit of a clunky process. So that might have been part of the reason why he was caught off guard there. But Abdul Carter, Penn State, probably going to be a top, you know, 2-3 pick at worst, maybe the number one pick, you know, amongst the best players in this entire draft class, easily. When they played Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, blank on the stat sheet, at least as far as sacks and pressures are concerned. So, and that was mostly Josh Connerly. So he's a guy that I think is a top 20 pick here. It's not a great dominant offensive tackle class. There isn't a guy like Joe Alt from Notre Dame last year, a guy like J.C. Latham with that overwhelming power and athletic ability, who, you know, obviously also went in the first 7 picks. But I think that Will Campbell, Kelvin Banks from Will from LSU, Kelvin Banks from Texas, Josh Connerly from Oregon, Armon Membu from Missouri, who was here this week for the weigh-ins and then got sick, so he didn't end up participating in the practices. Guys who could go in the first 15 or so picks.
I feel now let's get to like just the draft overall, because all those things are super interesting to me, because, you know, like Jason Alway a couple years ago from Penn State, another guy, traits palooza, but like I always equated him to like he's a fisherman, but he don't catch fish. Like, so I that's great. Like talking about Stewart, it's awesome. I'm great that you like to fish and you get off the quarter, but you got to get them on the ground. So those are parts of the process that you look at traits and have to balance. And this is why they get paid a lot of money to do it. But what about like, obviously the quarterbacks just period, but looking at the Senior Bowl stuff and watching them, I every single one of them, I start to go Jackson Dart, you know, doesn't have an elite arm. Like Dylan Gabriel, questions about size, probably system that he runs. Tyler Shuck's been hurt 17 times. Obviously,
he's older than you.
A lot of injuries. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, but now Shador and Cam Ward, and like, what about the quarterbacks, you know, in the draft this year and how we're feeling? Because last year, obviously, you had, you know, 6 in the top 12, right? Like, so this is totally different this year. And what's the storyline with the QBs?
You know, I have evaluators tell me all the time, you got to evaluate the drafts independent of other drafts. I don't think you do. I think you need to evaluate the draft through an historical lens as well, especially the draft or the couple of drafts that precede it, right? Because I think what happened last year can instruct how things might look this year. I don't know that any of those guys, they're going to come out, they're out in this year's draft class, would be stone cold locks to go ahead of the 6 guys that went last year. I think you probably have a conversation about Cam Ward somewhere in the territory of the tier of J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix Jr. The big thing about Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. last year is that, like, the tape was A+. The questions for those guys were, you know, Bo, a little bit older, Penix, who turned 24 after, like, the weekend after the draft, was not just a little bit older, but the guy had 2 torn ACLs on the same leg and 2 shoulder injuries on the same shoulder, right? So, like, you just might see teams a little more weary of a player because of those factors. That clearly wasn't the case, and the Falcons look smart. You know, they look not smart for signing Kirk Cousins, but look smart for feeling confident in Michael Penix Jr. in the small sample size, in my opinion. So, like, I think if you just ask me tape-wise, 1 through 6, maybe 1 through 5, because J.J. McCarthy was more of a projection just because of the small sample size of Michigan. The tape was good. It just wasn't a whole lot of tape, right? I mean, that was a defense and Blake Corum offensive line led team last year. So just to give you some perspective from last year about where these guys stack up. Now, as far as how I see them this year, and this is, you know, certainly just one person's opinion, so I don't want to sit here and tell you like the NFL says this guy's one and this guy's two. If you asked me, I had to cast my die on one player out of the quarterbacks in this year's class, it will be Cam Ward for this reason. I think he has, and I'm seeing more and more of this in the NFL, especially for young quarterbacks that go to bad teams, because most quarterbacks don't go behind offensive lines like Bo Nix did in Denver, which isn't a detriment of Bo. It's more of a testament to Denver's roster construction outside of the quarterback. You need guys that have the ability to make second reaction plays. That's what I call them, at least. It's, hey, the pocket breaks down, and is it sack or is it, you know, it may not be a sack every time because you may have the capacity to break the pocket, razzle dazzle a little bit. And even if it's a throwaway, second and 10 is better than second and 18. Maybe sometimes you make something out of nothing, which we saw with Cam Ward a lot this past year as well. Or, hey, even if you just scramble for 3-4 yards, you're playing a little bit further ahead of the sticks. I think the athletic ability is good. The accuracy is solid. He's got a cannon, does Cam Ward. And he can throw from a ton of different platforms. Like, he doesn't need a lot of time and space. He does not need to set his feet to drive the football down the field. It's loose. It's fast. He's got a chance to make some wow throws. Shedeur Sanders does not have a monster arm. He's got a good arm, and he's a fine athlete. I say fine. Like, this is not anywhere close to the athlete that we saw at the top of the draft last year. Like, Caleb Williams, better athlete. Jaden Daniels, better athlete. Drake May, better athlete than Shedeur Sanders. But as everyone knows, this guy can throw the ball when he's got time and space. And that's really important in the NFL. Where I get hung up on taking either of these guys is that, you know, in the case of Shedeur, if he goes to a bad offensive line, you know, his mobility inside and outside of the pocket is not difference maker level to me. He took a ton of sacks this past year, 42, most in the FBS. And a lot of people will say the offensive line in Colorado is no good. That's true. That being said, you got to play with urgency in the NFL. We've seen guys who have these natural skill sets, but just don't play fast enough. And then it's just Sackapalooza in the NFL. And I think I wish that Shedeur had, and this goes for a couple of degrees, you know, Shedeur and Quinn Ewers are the two guys that when I watch them this year, I say to myself, like, you play with a bit more urgency or desire in the urgency in the pocket, not desire. These guys both have plenty of desire, but play with a bit more urgency in the pocket. Some of the pressures and sacks that you ended up taking, like, you'd have a positive player, at least a zero play. And so that's why Shedeur, like, he's 17th overall on the big board, which, you know, that does that scream top five pick? It does not. Do I think he ends
up? Phil, one thing with Shedeur, tell me if you agree with this. The one thing that I agree with everything you said, the arm is not elite, but there's a lot of that that's just fine. You can still succeed. Here's what I watch Shedeur that I think really has to get better is the pocket presence, because he turns like this and tries to run out of sacks a lot. And you can do that some, but the problem is he got himself behind the sticks so much trying to outrun people unsuccessfully sometimes when, like, I want to see him step up and make a throw and use your elite trait and use your accuracy that's really, really good.
No doubt. And that's the thing. Like, the other thing is that, like, you know, a second and 16 off of a sack, it's not great, but it's better than second and 22, right? That was something that I think Caleb Williams is going to have to learn the hard way this offseason with the Bears and Shedeur as well. So let's do the positive outlook here, because there is a lot of positive, and, you know, it's not like he has to go to a team with a dog crap offensive line. He might go to one with a decent one. When he has the chance to stand in the pocket, he can make the throws. Again, it's not this, you know, Josh Allen arm strength, but it's beautiful, man. It is a thing of beauty watching him throw, the accuracy. Like, I think he does a great job of throwing receivers the football where they need the football to be to create run after catch opportunities. And I think you guys both know this, but it's something that scouts talk about all the time. He is tough as hell. This kid, all those hits he took this year, Shedeur Sanders never just packed it in or said, hey, you know what, like, enough of this crap for me. Like, the guy was always on the field and he always gutted it out. So there's a lot of toughness there. And I know that, being the son of Deion Sanders, I'm sure it had the pros, right? I mean, growing up comfortably is certainly that's an advantage in some ways in life. And
talking to Tom Brady, yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a great life. You know, the guy probably had some really cool things that not most people have. I also say this: that's a big microscope that you live under, and you can have your qualms about, hey, you know, Shador, should he have said this, said that, you know, like some of the pregame or postgame chatter with opponents, whatever. That doesn't really bother me, but. You ever heard a negative thing about Shador? Never been in trouble, never gotten a run with the law. Like, guy's just a good, you know, he's never turned his back on the challenge. Like, the character's really good here for Shador, and that matters a lot. So I think he's going to end up going to the first, I keep saying six picks just because I think the Raiders at six with the ties to Tom Brady make me think that's kind of the floor for Shador. If it was just me evaluating in a vacuum, do I feel like Shador goes to the Raiders and next year all of a sudden this team is back on track? No, I mean, at the time that you guys and I are having this conversation, I don't even know who their coordinator is, so I don't even know who's going to be coaching them up. But the offensive line in Las Vegas is real bad. We saw that this past year, and that would be a real problem for Shador.
So are there guys outside of Cam Ward and Shador Sanders that you're seeing this week at the Senior Bowl, like a Jackson Dart, and then we talked about the measurables like Milroe with the small hands. How are the quarterbacks performing this week in practice?
So I think Jackson probably has the best chance to emerge as that third quarterback taken amongst the guys that have been here this week, which are really the next best up, in my opinion, for the most part here. You guys know the book on Jackson, obviously, is, I mean, that thing looks pretty right there. That is like a work of art when the football is coming out of Jackson Dart's hands. Played in an incredibly fun scheme and an incredible scheme, too, with Lane. And, you know, I talk about this with a few quarterbacks. I throw Will Howard into this equation as well, playing in Chip Kelly's scheme. Is the big test for me with Jackson is two things. Handling pressure, because some of those Ole Miss pockets were like the size of the state of Mississippi. And the second thing is, when the puzzle isn't solved for you by the play call, how does it look, right? You know, when you don't have, you know, Juice Wells or Trey Harris running open or whatever it might be, or, you know, Jeremiah Smith, if you're up in Ohio State, or Mecca Abuga running wide open, how does it look for you? Like, how do you figure things out on the fly? But Jackson, I tell you what, like the rave reviews down here, a lot of Ole Miss staffers down here right now, and they're all like, they're ready to run through a wall for Jackson. So clearly leadership skills, very important. And he was running through some stuff yesterday. We had him on the microphones. You could hear him when they were giving him the play calls and him running through stuff, like had some sort of coach on the field to him. I will, and we'll see, maybe I'll have to go down swinging on this, but I think Dylan Gabriel is a player, man. And you guys both reference the size, but also the need for a scheme fit. And I think, you know, the job that I have is to rank guys, I call it vertically, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way down to, you know, probably about 250 or 350 guys. I think part of the process is also like thinking about it horizontally, like, hey, how does this guard for us, you know, we're the Saints, how much is this guard value, you know, what kind of value does he have versus a wide receiver that, you know, we may not feel like we have as much of a need for a wide receiver, so you move him down a little bit. But also it's valuing guys on a system. Like Dylan Gabriel, if you tried to get him to play the same game as certain quarterbacks in the NFL, like I don't think Buffalo should be drafting Dylan Gabriel and trying to have him play the game that Josh Allen plays. But if you put him in Arizona or Miami and some of this Miami. Stuff that they do, yeah, we're like, you know, basically
it was backup is a perfect job.
It'd be great, right? And I think that, like, you know, if I'm the Dolphins, given what we've seen without Tua the past couple of years. And the fact that, you know, we know the concussion is a history for Tua now, but like the guy was dealing with the hip again at the end of this year. That was the injury that ended his Alabama playing career. So, you know, I'd say to myself, like, is a third round pick for Miami, a fourth round pick for Miami, too steep of a price to pay to get a guy who can keep the offense afloat? Because as you guys know, and for those of us that play fantasy football, we know it too. When Tua is gone, that offense is like that's like not even JV. That's like Pop Warner level, and that just so to me, a guy like, and I like Dylan a lot. He's got a compact release, great leader. I mean, character is going to be, you know, really good there as well. Smart, played at three different schools. Shoot, you know that Miami thing. I this is so obvious. I'm surprised I haven't pieced it together as well. You know, him and Tua both being Hawaii kids, like that quarterback locker
lefties,
room,
almost, like yeah, it lefties, makes like total sense.
He's Tua light.
He is too alike, man. I know. Right, I gotta like stamp my case on this one right now.
Since you brought it up, I gotta ask you though, what's the average number of texts either per day or per week that this guy below me here sends you during the week to ask about fantasy football questions?
We get back and forth during the season real good. here's what I like about my guy though. A lot of the leagues that I play in now are with people that are also in the world of fantasy football. And we become like NFL GMs with our draft picks. I can't trade that guy. Nah, I can't get rid of DK Metcalf. You know, you got to bowl me over, right? Like, someone will be offering me like Justin Jefferson, their second child, for DK Metcalf. And I'm like, well, you know, or maybe that's, you know, whatever. You're like, come on now, man. Like, these trades. So I was like, the Pollock has got these great trades that he's able to make happen. You know, I think the part that I actually appreciate about it is fantasy football. Yeah, there was a time where there was like, not a stigma, but it was like, that's what nerds do, right? It's guys who live in their mom's basement on blogs, play fantasy football. And I mean, or guys that are like, you know, faces of college football and one of the greatest players of all time and, you know, NFL draft picks who just love ball, right? Like, I get it. It's not like you have to be a football junkie to play fantasy football, but I love that, you know, being down here this week, I talked to a couple guys on the field, like a couple scouts would be like, hey, man, like, I love fantasy. Like, can you blame them? Right? Like, everybody loves fantasy. You know, like, they all do. And, you know,
that's fantastic.
Everybody loves fantasy football, man. It's really cool. And, you know, I like it because it keeps people, like, I've got a lot of rings of my life that, like, stay close, whether it's high school friends, college friends, people I used to work with, people I work with right now, you know, and a little bit of trash talk. I'm not the best trash talker. I'm going to be the first to tell you that. And I don't do it a ton, but every once in a while, you got to let the league know, like, hey, don't come at me without bringing your fastball.
That's what I'm talking about. That's great. Well, Field, man, you might have been known for fantasy, but now doing the draft and then my boy's hosting shows on ESPN. And you've learned a lot, obviously, throughout this whole process. And we appreciate your time. And we might get you back on another time to talk about the draft. So appreciate your time, my man.
Yeah. No doubt. Let's do it again sometime before the draft. I can't wait. The only part I'm not looking forward to is if it's like 12 degrees in Wisconsin on April 24th, I might just get on the flight home. Hey,
it's going to be 12 degrees.
You guys have fun at the draft. I mean, listen, the NFL, hey, I love
Cleveland. A couple years ago, we did Cleveland for our coverage. Were you there?
I wasn't there, but I remember the weather.
Bro, I remember that wind whipping off the river while we're covering, and it was, you know, they would throw back and forth, and sometimes you'd be on, sometimes you wouldn't. I'd literally be like, I mean, just it was crazy. How cold it was, but you're in Bristol most of the time. You're used to this crap, aren't you?
Yeah, but you know, by April 24th, usually in Bristol, we've hit like, you know, 50 to 60 degree weather. Like, golf courses are open by April 24th in Connecticut. Like, that to me is kind of like an indicator of where we're at on the calendar. I need to know that I'm going to get that in Green Bay. Otherwise, I'm going to pack an igloo or something.
It'll be good.
A warm Snuggie. Yeah. Appreciate you, brother.
I hope so, man. See you guys.
See you, bud.